Okay, here we go. Just as a reminder, we are still working on trying to understand the purpose of the Pasuk Aleha that came to exclude Eshet Achod Isha, right? If two brothers marry two sisters and one of them dies without children, so the widow that's childless cannot undergo Yibum because that sister-in-law is also his wife's sister, which is an Erva. We want to know why you need a pasuk to tell us that Arayot are excluded from Yibum. So we have been, one approach is to suggest that one approach is to find a mitzvah aseh that is docha alo tase that involves kares. If we're able to do that, then we have the theoretical framework that allows us to suggest the havamina that Yibum should override the prohibition of erva, which is liable for kares, and therefore you need a pasuk aleha to tell us otherwise, that Achot Isha does not undergo Yibum. So we're still trying to prove that idea. We've been doing that for a while, and don't worry, it just gets more complicated on Zion. But it's interesting. This is like very, this is the today's daf is going to work on a number of approaches, introducing different methodologies of hermeneutics within the Torah, how you can learn, thinking about Rabbi Shmuel's 13 principles through which you can derive halachot from the text. We're going to mention two such methods over the course of Dav Zion and continue along this route. So just to review the last piece of Gemara we did on the top of, on the bottom of Vav Amud Bet and Zion Amud Aleph, the Havamina that we wanted to present now is that since Mitat Beitin, right, which includes, we've decided already last time, it includes a Isser Kares, otherwise, right, it includes a Malacha, right, melting or cooking the lead that is poured down the throat of a capital punishment detainee, someone liable for capital punishment, is a Malacha D'Oraisa. It's a Torah level prohibition, which under other circumstances would be liable for kares. And we wanted to suggest that since the sacrificial service in the Mikdash override Shabbos, right? This is sort of a syllogism. If Avoda is Docha Shabbos and Mitat Beit Din is Docha Avoda, right? In other words, you offer karbanos, certainly public karbanos on Shabbos, and a Kohen who is liable for the death penalty is taken from even if the Kohen is in the midst of performing the Avoda, you swoop him away and docha and push aside the Avoda in order to do capital punishment. So as a logical syllogism, capital punishment should override Shabbos, because Avoda overrides Shabbos and capital punishment overrides Avoda. So then we said that's why you need the pasuk of Moshvot Seichem to teach us that Mitat Beit Din is never Docha Shabbos. And we still therefore have no source that an Aseh would ever be docha a lo tase that involves kares. So that's what we're picking up here. And now the Gemara goes on a little bit of a tangent on the previous proof, right? So the Gemara asks, right? The Gemara asks, umai, fourth line from the top, last second to last word on the line, Zayin Amud Aleph, 7a. Umai, what is the Gemara mean on the previous Amud where it says, o'eno dekamar? Right? What is the Tana of the Mishnah saying when he says, "Oeno," that Mitat Beit Din might not yield to Shabbos and might override Shabbos? Right? That's what we said over there. As part of, how can you possibly think that Misas Beit Din, that capital punishment, might override Shabbos. So the answer is that there's a flaw in the above logic that's quoted at the top of Zayin Amud Aleph. Hachi Kamar, Kvurat Meit Mitzvah Tochiach, right? We had this very nice syllogism, right, that if the Avoda and the Mitat Mikdash override Shabbos, and Mitat Beitin overrides Avoda, then Mitat Beitin should override Shabbos. Well, that doesn't exactly work because we have another example that disproves that logic, and that's the example of Meis Mitzvah, right? Somebody who dies and leaves no relatives, there's no one around to bury them. So what happens in that case? Why? Shadochas Avoda, right? If a Kohen is in the midst or about to do the sacrificial service in the Beit HaMikdash, which is really important, if he stumbles upon or hears about a Meis Mitzvah, a corpse that requires burial and there's nobody to do it, so he has to push aside the sacrificial service, the Avoda, in order to bury this person. And then he can't go back to the Avoda because he's now Tamei Meis. But, and nonetheless, Ein Dochas HaShabbos, right? And Meis Mitzvah, although it pushes aside the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, does not push aside Shabbos. If you have a Meis Mitzvah, you don't bury them on Shabbos. You don't bury anyone on Shabbos, whether they're a Meis Mitzvah or whether there's lots of people to attend to their burial. Burial does not take place on Shabbos. If you recall, we talked about in Moed Katan whether burial takes place on Yontif. But burial certainly does not take place on Shabbos. So that logic is flawed. You can't say just because something is Docha Avoda, it's Docha Shabbos, because Meis Mitzvah proves that's not correct. So therefore, Hadar Amar, so fine. So that's the reason why you suggest the possibility that logic that we brought at the top of the page is incorrect, because Meis Mitzvah proves that something can be Docha the Avoda and still not be Docha Shabbos. If that's the case, then let's turn it around. We find this on the previous Talmud as well. Hadar Amar Kvuras Meis Mitzvah Tidcha Shabbos Mikal V'Chomer. Right, so let's learn it the other way around. Let's say that from here we learn that burying a Meis Mitzvah is even Docha Shabbos as a Kal V'Chomer. What's the Kal V'Chomer? Right, we're about 6-7 lines from the top. Uma Avoda Shehi Docha Shabbos. Right, if Avoda, the sacrificial service in the Beis HaMikdash, override Shabbos, right, Karbanos, like the Karban Tamid, is offered even on Shabbos, Kvuras Meis Mitzvah Docha Osa. Right? And Kvuras Meis Mitzvah is Docha Avoda, right? If Avoda is pushed aside by Shabbos, and Kvuras Meis Mitzvah is Docha the Avoda. How do we know that from the Pasuk Mevelachoto? Right? Achoto, the Kohen Gadol, can even become Tameh if he has a sister that's not married, that has no one else to bury her, except for him, he even pushes aside the Avoda. So Shabbos Shenidchem Ibnei Avoda, if Shabbos, which is pushed aside, which is considered inferior, secondary compared to the Avoda and the Beit HaMikdash, Ein Odin Shetei Kvuras Meis Mitzvah Docha Ota. Can't we learn that logic? That if Meis Mitzvah pushes aside Avoda, and Avoda pushes aside Shabbos, then perhaps we should say that Meis Mitzvah pushes aside Shabbos, and you can bury a Meis Mitzvah even on Shabbos. So maybe that's a legitimate logic, right? From the other way around. So Talmud Lomar. So then we need the pasuk, right? So we're accepting that that's a potential theoretical havamina, namely that Meis Mitzvah is Docha Shabbos. Therefore, we look to the psukim to teach us, right? Logic can work in a lot of different ways. The pasuk tells us what the pasuk tells us. So we want to know whether we need a pasuk to tell us that Meis Mitzvah that it doesn't happen. So Talmud Lomar Lo Tavaru. So comes the pasuk Lo Tavaru Eish B'chol Moshe Oseichem to teach us straight that Shabbos is not pushed aside by Mises Beis Din, nor is it pushed aside as in, by the way, for Meis Mitzvah. You do not perform capital punishment on Shabbos, nor do you perform. Do you undertake a Meis Mitzvah, the burial of a Meis Mitzvah, on Shabbos? The Gemara continues, right? And according to the initial understanding that an Aseh is Docha Lotase, what is the basis to suggest mitat beitin is not docha Shabbos, right? Mayo enu dekamar, right? So what's the if ase is docha lo tase, then why shouldn't mitat beitin, right, override Shabbos? Hachi kamar, mani mechayim. What do I fulfill with the verse mechale amot yumat, right? That you should that those who violate Shabbos are put to death. B'shar malachot, with all other violations of Shabbos, I might have thought, incurs the death penalty, chutz mimitat beitin, right? I might have thought that if you violate Shabbos, right, wantonly, with mourning, with witnesses, right, you incur a capital punishment, except when beitin formally undertakes capital punishment in order to punish someone, then the laws of Shabbos are suspended. Avol mitat beitin dachi Shabbos dasi asei dati asei v'docha lo tase. Right? I might have thought that the asei, the positive commandment on beitin to enact capital punishment, even with malachos involved, override Shabbos based on the general principle of asei docha lo tase. Hadar amar. Therefore we have to interject. Emar damrinan as ati asei v'dachi lo tase greda. Right, we're going back to that. In other words, asei docha lo tase only works when the punishment on the lo tase is the typical punishment of malchut, of lashes. What we call an asei greda, a typical, normal lo tase. Lo tase sheish bakaret mishamatle d'dachi, right? Right? So we say, right, that the only type of ase that is the only type of lotase that is pushed aside by an ase is an ase greda, but an ase that has karis with it is not pushed aside. A lotase that has karis with it is not pushed aside by an ase. Hadar amar. Then the Tana went on to say, no, that it is possible to consider, right, there is a logical argument to be made. Whether it's compelling or not is for us to decide later. But there's an argument, compelling argument, to suggest the atu ase docha et lotase, lav lotase chomer minei. Right? V'kati ase v'dachilei. Right? So you could say that the very notion of ase docha lo tase, which we're not questioning, we're questioning that on some level there is this notion of an ase, a positive commandment, pushing aside a negative precept. So the Tana says that's a tremendous chiddush, right? That's the major chiddush. The major chiddush is that an ase, because if you look at the punishment for non-observance of an ase versus a lo tase, right? If I have a commandment to do and I don't do it, what's my punishment? Nothing, right? Bittul ase, except by mila and karban pesach, there is no punishment. There is no repercussions in a court of law. I miss the opportunity to do a mitzvah, right? I don't get that check on my ledger of positive commandments. What's the punishment of a typical lotase in its non-observance, namely in its violation, is malchus, right? So that's a tremendous chiddush. So an ase, which had I not done, would just make me liable for a bittul ase, right? No real punishment, is able to push aside a lotase, whose violation incurs lashes. That's a tremendous chiddush. So the Tana says that's the chiddush. Right, once you take that as a given, then the next step is rather minor, right? Right, once we say that that's the case, mali chumra zuto, mali chumra rabba. What difference does it make the severity of the punishment? It's already a tremendous, going from ase to docha lotase, even a lotase greda, even a typical lotase that incurs the punishment of malchus, right, is a tremendous chiddush. To say that an ase can then be docha lotase with kares is not such a big chiddush. compared to the first step. The first step was the big step. Once we agree to that, mali chumra rabba, mali chumra zuta. What difference should it make if the penalty of the lotasa is malchus, or if the penalty of the lotasa is kares? Right? Either once an asay we've proven can't push aside a lotasa, right? The logic could indicate that it doesn't matter what type of lotasa it is. Talmud Omar, right? So that's the potential logic. So Talmud Omar, comes the Gemara to tell us, comes the pasuk to say lo tavaru. The pasuk says that you don't light a fire, and that tells us that under no circumstances can you violate Shabbos for Misas Beis Din at all. And therefore, what we're saying is that there is no legitimate havamina to suggest that an asay would ever come along and be docha a lo tasa with karis, right? So we still don't have that, right? We still don't have a working logic that would necessitate the pasuk of aleha to come to reject that an asay could be docha a lo tasa of karis. Okay. So it ran its course, and we're going to go about it from a different approach, right? To try to understand the need for a pasuk of aleha to exclude achot isha, a wife's sister, from undergoing yibum. Ela itzrich, right? We needed the pasuk of aleha. Why? Saka dai tachamina. I might have thought tihavi. Hi, Eshet Ach is a Dover Shalai Bechlal, V'yatza Min Echlal, Lame Lo Lame Al Asma Yatza, Al Lame Al Echlal Kulo Yatza. Right? Maybe this case, I read a lot, but it's anyone who says Rabbi Shmuel in the morning, this is one of those statements that should be familiar, and now we'll begin to understand what it is. This will be that opportunity. Right? So let's explore the possibility that Eshet Ach might be one of those situations where you have an idea, let's say in this case a prohibition, that should have been prohibited based on the general category of, in this case, arayot. And it's specifically singled out, right? Even though we know that it's part of a group that we already know is forbidden, the Torah then goes back and specifies it individually, right? So why would the Torah specify one erva, even though we know all the arayot are similarly prohibited? Lo l'amid al atzma yatzah, right? It was not singled out to teach a law that only relates to itself. El l'amid al klal kula yatzah, right? That this is one of the ways of learning something, right? It works. This is one of Rabbi Shmuel's principles of how to learn psukim, and that is if you have a category that you know about, and then the Torah goes ahead and specifies one item from that category, what is a legitimate mode of hermeneutic is that you say that specification, that specific isser in this case is singled out to teach us something about the category writ large, not just about that specific case that is mentioned. So we're going to give an example of how this plays out, and then we're going to apply it to achot isha. So here we go. The Tanya, the Brisa, we're about halfway down the page, three lines up from the top of the Tosfot Shenemar, the last word on the line. The Tanya, because it was learned in a Brisa, Dover Shaya Bechlal, a concept that is included in a general rule that we already know from the Torah, V'yotza Min HaKlal, and is singled out. Is specified. What does that come to tell us? Not only something about that specific instance, but about the class of items altogether. Ketzad, how does this work? All right, so here we go. This is the example, and then we're going to apply it to Eshedah. So here we go. V'nevesh asher tochal baser mizevach ha-shlamim v'tumateu alav. Right? The pasuk tells us a person who eats shlamim while he's tamei, right? Then he did something wrong. He actually gets karis. right? So the Gemara asks, "Velo shlamim b'chal kachim hayu." Shlamim is a type of kachim, right? It's a type of sacred, sanctified meat, right? And we already know that anyone who eats kachim, bituma, is liable for kares. So why does the Torah have to tell us that one who eats shlamim bituma is liable for kares, right? So we have, this is a case, davar shayah minachlal, davar shayah bichlal, right? Shlamim is included in kachim, v'yotzer minachlal, and it's specifically mentioned that shlamim eaten bituma is liable for kares. So what does that come to tell us? So this is what the Gemara says, v'lamayatsu, why is it singled out? L'hakish alayhem, and to compare it to all other kachim, l'omar l'chad, to teach us, ma shlamim yuchadim kachim mizbeach. Just as shlamim are specific to the mizbeach, right? Kachim have fats and blood and limbs that are offered on the mizbeach, right? Af kol kachim mizbeach. So too, this rule that we've been talking about, namely eating sacred animals, bituma, liable for kares, only applies to those things that are like shlamim, namely that are specified for the mizbeach. What else is there? Well, we know that there's another category, right? There's kachshe mizbeach, and there's kachshe bet kabayit, right? There are animals that are designated, sanctified, sacred, that must be offered on the mizbeach. And then there are animals that are dedicated for use, for the upkeep of the mikdash, right? So those animals are sold, and the money is then used for the general funding of the upkeep of the temple. So yatsu kachei bedekabayit, right? So let's say you eat an animal that was sanctified, sacred for bedekabayit. It wasn't going to be offered on the mizbeach, and you ate it bituma. So are you liable for kares? So comes this lima that we just brought. The reason why shlamim is singled out after it was included in the general prohibition of eating bituma, eating these animals bituma, is to teach us this law that is now applicable to the entire class, right? This idea of eating kachim bituma only applies to karbanot like kachim, animals like shlamim, namely animals that are brought to some degree or another on the mizbeach, animals that are sacred but do not come in contact with the mizbeach. If you eat them bituma, you are not liable for kares. Okay, so that's the example of davar shayah bichlal, v'yatzer min hachlal, and then that, so shlamim, when it's singled out, doesn't tell us something about shlamim specifically, but tells us something about that entire class of kachim. So hachanami, here too, right? So now we're going to apply it to our case of achot isha. But before we get to achot isha, we're going to apply it to eshet ach, right? It's the same thing. Ha eshet ach v'chlal kol arayot haita. In general, a man is not allowed to marry his sister-in-law, even after the marriage to his brother has been ended, right? So in general, v'lama yatsa, right? But when it comes to yibum, that's the model case, right? That is the case of yibum, is eshet ach. Even though eshet ach, you're not allowed to marry the wife of one's brother, still they do yibum. Lama yatsa, right? So why was the case of eshet ach singled out by yibum? The real answer is because that's what yibum is. But let's see what the Gemara answers. No, it comes to tell us something about all arayot, right? Right. So this is the havamina. Eshet ach is an erva. All arayot are asur to this person. Eshet ach is singled out as being permissible through yibum after the brother dies childless. And now, why is it singled out? Maybe it was singled out to teach us something about arayot in general, namely ma eshet ach sharia. Just as eshet ach is permissible in the context of yibum, af kol arayot nami shariyad. Then the logic, based on this principle we just mentioned before from Rabbi Shmuel, that's quoted by Rabbi Yishmael. It's not his principle, but he codified it and quoted it, should teach us that if Eshet Ach is singled out, and Eshet Ach can override that Yibum can override the Isser of Eshet Ach, then perhaps Yibum can override all Arayot, based on this principle that we just mentioned, right? So, if that's the case, then if that's the Havamina, and we consider that to be a legitimate theory, then we've just learned why we need a special pasuk to exclude Achorisha from Yibum, because the pasuk of Eshet Ach, right? The pasuk of Eshet Ach, the wife of one's brother, might have taught us that Eshet Ach is an example, but it applies to all Arayot, that Yibum can override the Isser Erva, of any Erva. Comes the pasuk Aleha to tell us that that's not the case, right? So that's what we are suggesting, that we do need the pasuk of Aleha to come and reject the inference that comes from the initial stating of the mitzvah of Yibum, which overrides the otherwise prohibition of marrying one's brother's wife. So the Gemara asks, Midami, how is this similar to the case of Shlomim? In other words, we want to say that just as we said by Shlomim, that the Shlomim teaches us that the Isser of eating Kachim Betuma is only things like Shlomim, so too, the Havamina is okay, is legitimate to say that Eshet Ach is just an example, and really all Arayot are pushed aside by Yibum. But the Gemara says that it's not, the logic is not glot, if you think about it. Why? Hatzam klal be'isru, prat be'isr. Right there, by the Shlomim, by the Karbanos case that we brought down, the general category of Kachim in general, and the singled out case of specifically Shlomim, all deal with the prohibition, right? You're not allowed to eat all kachim bituma that are kachim is bath. You're not allowed to eat Shlomim that are bituma, right? So there's that commonality, but hacha here that's not the case. Klal be'isru par beheter, right? The logic doesn't flow because By Arayot and Yibum, what do we want to say? That all of them are permissible, but we have no source that all Arayot should be permissible for Yibum. All we have is a carve-out, an exemption, that Eshet Ach is permissible for Yibum. Nowhere do we have any suggestion that all Arayot, so we don't really have, the case of Yibum and Arayot, there's no Davar Shaya Bichlal, right? There's no general statement that Yibum overrides Erva. No, we have a specific case that Eshet Ach falls aside for Yibum. The Yibum overrides Eshet Ach. We have no source that Yibum overrides Arayot in general, so it's not comparable. And therefore, the Havamina is illegitimate. It's not logical. And therefore, we don't need the Pasuk of Aleha to reject that Havamina, because that Havamina is not correct. Right, so we're going to try a different mode of hermeneutics. Ha lo dami, it's not comparable to davar shayi b'chlal v'yatza min achlal lo aman al klal yatza al al kul yatza. Right, we're saying that's not the case, and basically we can distill it to the fact that nowhere do we see that Yibum overrides Arayot in general. All we know is that Yibum overrides the specific case of Eshet Ach, and it's illegitimate to suggest that if it overrides Eshet Ach, it should override all Arayot, because we have no such source in the text. Hold on 1 second, I'll be right back. Okay, sorry. So we're gonna try again from a different perspective. Hello, dummy. So our case of Eshet Ach is similar to Davar Shaya Bechlal, V'yatza Lidon B'davar Achadash. Right? It's something that was included in a general category, but was singled out to be treated like a new case, not to teach us something about the general class, but but the teacher's a new case, right? And what do we say about that, right? And just to apply it in this case before we go into it, Eshedach is an erva. But Eshedach is singled out by Yibum to teach us something about Eshedach specifically and not necessarily something about Arayot in general, that Yibum can override Arayot in general. Shiyata Yachalach Sir L'Klala. You cannot return it to its general category, Ad She'achzeinu L'Chakatu B'Feirush, unless the Torah returns it there explicitly, right? So we would not be allowed to say that just because Eshedach is pushed aside for Yibum, that all Arayot are pushed aside, unless we have a text that teaches us that. We're going to do similarly, just like we brought an example of the previous hermeneutic from a case of Shlomit eating Kachim Bituma. We're going to similarly show an example of this before we apply it in a different element, before we apply it to the case of Yibum and Arayos. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Davar Shaya Bachlal, something that is included in a general category, V'yatzuli Dama Davar Achadash, and then is singled out to teach us in a new case. V'yatzuli Rashay Lachzir L'Chlalo, you cannot then apply that new case to the general class. Achach Chazanim Kalachakatu B'Ferosh, unless the Torah specifically tells us that unique law is applicable to the entire category. Ketzad, what does this look like in real life? So this is, what is this? This is Mitzora. V'shachat et ha-keves b'makom asher yishchat et ha-chatat v'ta'ola b'mkom ha-kodesh. That the Mitzora, at the end of his purification process, slaughters the asham where he slaughtered the chatat and the ola. Right? And then the pasuk continues to say, ki kachatat ha-asham hu la-kohen. For the asham is like the chatat for the kohen. Right? So obviously, like that piques one's interest, right? Why do we have to tell us the asham is like the chatat? Shane tamar lomar kachatat ha-asham, right? What, the Torah didn't have to tell us that the asham has the same rules as the chatat, right? Umatam lomar kachatat ha-asham. So what is that? Why? What do we learn from that phrase kachatat ha-asham? Right? So this is the reason. This is the suggestion. Right, so here we go. Lefi sheyatza asham mitzora lidom adavar chadash. Right, mitzora's asham is singled out. Why lidom adavar chadash, to teach us something unique about the asham of the mitzora? What's unique about the asham of the mitzora? The Gemara tells us, bo'en yad bo'en regel hayamanis. Right, the fact that the blood is sprinkled on the Mitzora's thumbs, right? The thumb of his right hand, the thumb of the big toe of his right foot, right? There's all those bow ends and ears, right? The Mitzora has blood sprinkled in ways that is unique to the Mitzora. Even though Asham is a general category, the Asham Mitzora has unique features to it, and that's why it's singled out. Yachol, so I might have thought, that lo yeton matan damim ve'murim legamim mizbeach. I might have thought that since the Mitzora's asham is unique in that some of its blood is sprinkled on the ear and the toe of the Mitzora, so that it is completely precluded, excluded from the normal category of asham, and therefore is not subject to the normal asham criteria and obligations like the normal application of the blood on the Mizbeach and parts of the animal to be burned like a regular asham, right? So maybe that's what what else we learn from the singling out of the asham of the Mitzora, right? So Talmud Lomar, the Torah comes the pasuk to say ki kachatat hasham hu. That even though there are unique features of the Mitzora's asham, about the sprinkling of the blood on the thumbs, nonetheless, in all other ways, the pasuk tells us kachatat hasham. The Torah goes back to teach us explicitly that in all other ways, the asham of the Mitzora is like a regular asham, and that's what that phrase of kachatat hasham comes to tell us, namely, top of Zayin Amavez. Ma chatat tuuna ma tandamim ve'murim legam mizbeach. Just like a chatas requires sprinkling blood on the mizbeach and burning parts of the animal. Af asham tam ma tandamim ve'murim legam mizbeach. So too, this asham, which granted has unique features, right? There's a sprinkling on the thumbs. Nonetheless, that doesn't preclude it from the normal features of a chatas and asham concerning sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach and burning up pieces of it, right? So again, just to review, this hermeneutic is applied to the mitzora. The asham of the mitzora is singled out to teach us something unique about the asham of the mitzora, about sprinkling on the thumbs. And then the Torah says, and at that point, right, once it's singled out for a new halacha, you would not be able to assume that it's like a regular asham in any way. Comes the pasuk, right, kachatat ha-asham, to tell us, no, that in every other way, the mitzvah's asham is similar to a regular chatas. But had it not gone that next step, there'd be no way to prove that the mitzvah's asham is similar to all the rest of them. Right, so now we're going to apply this here. Right, v'ilo ahadre kra, had the pasuk not gone on to say kachatat ha-asham, right, then what I've said, havamina lamai denafak nafak, right? Those things that are specifically mentioned by the Asham Mitzora apply, right? Specifically the sprinkling on the thumbs. But however, lamai de lo nafak. But other features of a regular Asham would not be applicable to a Mitzora's Asham because they're not specified. And what we're told is that the Mitzora's Asham is unique. Once it's unique, it's completely unique, and there's no features that overlap with a regular Asham. So the Pasuk has to tell us otherwise, right? So Hachanami. So that's the model we want to suggest applies by Yibum and Eshedach, right? Hachanami. Havamina, I would have said concerning Yibum, Eshedach to Ishtara. Right? The Yibum specifically in the Torah's text is dealing with a case of the wife of one's brother, which is an erva, but it seems that Yibum pushes aside the Isser erva of Eshed Ach. Eshed Ach to Ishtra, Ishtri, right? Sharai Ava, right? So here we have a case where generally a man is not allowed to marry Arayot. And including in those Arayot is the category of Eshed Ach. But once Eshed Ach is singled out for Yibum, we should assume that permission only applies to Eshed Ach. It doesn't apply to anything else unless you have a pasuk teaching us otherwise, right? You need the pasuk to go on and say that Eshed Ach is a model for all other arayot, which it doesn't say. We have no indication that Yibum should be applicable beyond Eshed Ach. And therefore, there's no havamina to suggest that the assay of Yibum, again, we keep going back to that, there's no havamina to suggest the assay of Yibum should be docha in general, the lotas of kares involved in Arayim. Therefore, since there's no such logic, there's no need, we still have no need for the pasuk of Allah. So, Ella. Right, we're another Ella. So I think we've gone as far as we can at that point, and we're going to try a different approach, right? And to suggest what the need is for the pasuk of Allah. Salka daita chamina. Right, so we're five lines from the top. No, I'm sorry. Six lines from the top. So Allah, I might have thought, Taiti b'memetzinu me'eshedach, right? We're trying a different approach, hermeneutic, right? That the reason why we might have thought that all arayot are pushed aside for Yibum is from a memetzinu, analogy, right? If this, then also that, right? Memetzinu me'eshedach, right? In other words, and we go on to explain it. Ma'eshedach mi'abma, just as Eshet Ach undergoes Yibum, so too, Af Achor Isha Titi Abim. Then we might have thought that also, just as just as a the wife of my brother undergoes Yibum, so too the sister of my wife should undergo Yibum, right? Different, we see the difference. Eshedach versus Achonisha. Eshedach is my brother's wife, right? Who may or may not be related to my wife. And Achonisha is a case where two brothers married two sisters, and then when the brother dies, you're left with the possibility of the Yavama being your original wife's sister. So we might have thought, Amam Etzinim, if Eshed Ach is permitted through Yibam, then Achor Isha should also be permitted through Yibam. Comes the Pasuk of Aleha to tell us otherwise. So maybe that's the logic that the Pasuk of Aleha comes to reject. So the Gemara says, be dummy. Gemara says, no, we don't like that logic of the Amam Etzinim. Hatam Chari Sura. By the case of Eshedach, Yibam pushes aside one prohibition, right? Right? In the case of Achod Isha, Hachatrei Suri, right? Yibam pushes aside the prohibition of marrying your brother's sister, your brother's wife, sorry. But who says that Yibam pushes aside the prohibition of your brother's wife when it's also your wife's sister? It's two prohibitions. So what kind of analogy is there? Right? Eshed Ach has one Isser. Achod Isha has two Isurim. So there's no Mem Etzinu. If there's no Mem Etzinu, then we have no Hava Mina to suggest that they are that all Arayot should be pushed aside, that Yibam should override all Arayot. So the Gemara pushes on. Right? Right? We push on. We haven't given up. Ma'u detema, maybe we could have said, ho of ishtri. Right? Since Eshed Ach is pushed aside, then under all mikol makom, under all circumstances, whomever is permitted to marry your brother can undergo yibum, even if that woman is also your wife's sister. Right? Hold ishtri. Right? The counter logic is, who cares if it's one iser, two isurim? Right? By the way, this is similar to the logic we said earlier about aseh being docha the lotase of karis. Right? That's not the big chiddush. The big chiddush is that an aseh is docha lotase in general, and it's a small chiddush to say, to go from an Isser Greda to an Isser Kares, right? So I think a similar logic is being used here. The big Chiddush is that Yibum overrides the Erev of Eshed Ach. Who cares if the Eshed Ach also happens to be Achor Isha, right? Once, hold Ishtri. Once the Torah says that it's permissible, then we should suggest that logic applies to anyone. Now again, there are certain people, there are certain Arayot that Yibum won't be applicable to, because there are certain women that brothers, neither brother can marry, right? A sister of both brothers, neither of the brothers can marry, right? So there are many arayot that would never be subject to yibum, because neither brother would be allowed to marry her, right? And if you're not allowed to marry her, then there's no kiddushin. If there's no kiddushin, there's no yibum, right? So we're only talking about a subset of women who are permitted to marry the brother, but are not allowed to marry the yavam after the brother dies. So the Gemara says that's not such a big chiddush. The huge chiddush was that Yibam exists and can override Eshed Ach. Once it can override Eshed Ach, it's not a far step. It's not a big step to assume it overrides all Isurim that are applicable in that case. And
what are the two Isurim that we're saying that the second case says two Isurim, and therefore
so
we
Yibam,
can't?
In the case of Achor Isha, or where Aleha comes, it's Eshed Ach, right? This woman is my brother's wife, but he's also Achor Isha. She's also my wife's sister. So there's two Isurim. There's two different Arayot that this woman represents. And Yibum can override both of them. At first, we thought that's illegitimate, right? Because there's no Mem Etzinu between Achor Isha and Eshed Ach. Achor Isha is two Isurim. Eshed Ach is only one Isur of Erva. But then the Gemara says, no, that maybe you could apply a Mem Etzinu because once you're overriding Shaddach, it's not a big deal to suggest that it could also override Ibum could also override Achorisha. And we find this when we not Timra Darmina and Hov Ishtri, right? Sort of the middle, right in the middle of the page, right? Umina Timra, where do we know that we have this idea that once an Isser is pushed off, then we push it off even for further follow-up or additional Isurim. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Mitzora Shachal Shmini Shol Be'er Pesach, right? A very specific case, right? A Mitzora, right, has to wait 7 days, and on the eighth day, he purifies himself. So Mitzora, whose eighth day falls out on Erev Pesach, talk about bad timing, or maybe good timing, right? Well, this is bad timing. Ra Keri Bo Bayom. On the eighth day, he's supposed to purify himself. He's ready to go and then be part of the Karban Pesach. And then he sees Keri. He sees a seminal emission that night, that morning, right? So generally, a person who sees Keri, right, can immerse right away and becomes Tahar, or allowed, let's put it this way, is allowed to ascend the Har Bayit that evening. That evening will be too late, right? That evening will be too late for him to offer the Garban Pesach. So what are we going to suggest? But Vitaval, right? So he saw it's a Mitzora. His eighth day is Erev Pesach. He sees Keri, and that morning of Erev Pesach, right early in the morning after Tanis Bechoros, after the Siyum, he goes and immerses in a mikvah, right? So generally we say, don't go up to the Mikdash until that evening, till Shkia. But here, the Amru Chachamim, right? The rabbis, the sages, the Chachamim said, right? Before nightfall, before Shkia, he's considered to be a Tvul Yom. Tvul Yom means he went to Mikvah, but he's not completely pure until Shkia, until nightfall, until nighttime. But he already went to the Mikvah. Normally there are restrictions on a Tvul Yom. But Amru Chachamim, in this case, the Chachamim said, Afal Bishein Tvul Yom Acher Nechnas, even though generally a Tvul Yom, meaning someone who removed his Tuma through Mikvah during the day, should wait till night before he ascends the Mikdash, to the Har Bayit. Zeh Nechnas, this one, this particular Tvul Yom, can go to the Mikdash to complete his tzarat purification, so that he will be completely pure in order to partake of the Karban Pesach, right? So we allow this Tevul Yom to ascend the Mikdash to the Har Bayit in order for him to be ready to eat the Karban Pesach. And why? Why the rabbis make this point? So we say, right, we're about 2, 4, 6, 7 lines from the bottom, Mutav Sheyavo Asei, Sheish bo karet, right? It's better that we prefer or we legitimate an asay that has kares, right? Namely, Karban Pesach. If you don't eat Karban Pesach, and you could, right, you're liable for kares. So we look at the importance of the asay of Karban Pesach. V'yidcha asay sheim bo kares, and let it override the positive commandment that doesn't have kares, right? In other words, the prohibition of a tvul yom ascending the mikdash is formulated as an asay, right? You can have, right? So even sometimes a don't is formulated as a do, right? Sometimes a prohibition is formulated as an asay, right? Right, so it's like members only. Right? Members only is an assay, but it's really telling you, right, that non-members are not allowed. Right, so the same idea applies here. When we talk about a tvul yom prohibited from ascending the mikdash to the mikdash, that's formulated as an assay that only kol tahar, only someone who's pure can ascend the beit to the beit hamikdash, and that generally precludes a tvul yom. But that's an assay without kares. Ascending a tvul yom, going up to the Temple Mount, is only is a bitl assay, and there's no one is not liable for kares just to the Temple Mount. Going to the Azara will be a violation with kares, but just ascending to the Temple Mount, it would be permissible, right? So we're saying that the Metzora should go up to the Har HaBayit and become purified, the Metzora, and then he, even though he's a Tful Yom, and so that he can partake of the Karban Pesach, whose non-compliance would be liable for kares. Just as an aside to that, from Rabbi Yochanan learned Dvar Torah filo asei letpai, right? Rabbi Yochanan just points out that there's not even a positive commandment concerning a Tvul Yom not ascending to the Temple Mount. Shenemar, it's only, in other words, the entire thing, the entire idea of a Tvul Yom restricted access to the Har HaBayit is only Midrabanan. It's not even a Bitul Asei. Shenemar, based on a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, Vayomer Yehoshafat b'Kal Yehuda, Lifnei HaChatzer HaChadasha, Yehoshafat stood among the congregation of Judah, in front of the Chatzer HaChadasha, right? He was on the Temple Mount, and they call it the new courtyard. My Chatzer HaChadasha, what does it mean it was the new courtyard? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan Shet, Shechichu Badvarim, right? They instituted and enacted new laws for the respect and the reverence of the Har HaBayit, and one of those laws were, right, the rabbis instituted this, Tvul Yom Lo Yikanes L'machane Levia, that Tvul Yom cannot enter the Machane Levi, which includes the old city and the Temple Mount, right? So, that's just an aside. Either way, we would say the assay that involves, whose non-compliance involves kares, would obviate, right, would be docha, the whatever prohibition there is on the Tvul Yom from ascending to the Har HaBayit. Vamar Ula. And Ula said, right? Vamar Ula, ho v'huter l'tzarato, right? Hutar l'kruyav. Right? Ula said, once it was permitted for him to ascend as a Metzora, so we also waived whatever restriction there was on him to ascend as a Baal Keri, right, as a Tvul Yom. Right? So that's what we want to say, that once the Torah allows one restriction to be circumvented or overridden, then we allow another one as well. We want to apply that in the case of Achot Isha. That's the logic that would have made us think that Achot Isha is permitted for Yibam. That once Eshet Ach is waived, so to Achot Isha should be waived. And that's the logic that would have led us to think that Yibam overrides other Arayot as well. It's very interesting. The Gemara talks about how exactly this went down. Right? That the Metzora, right? The Metzora was allowed to go to Har HaBayit, but where was the blood sprinkled from? From the Azara. The Azara, the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash, the Metzora and the Tvul Yom are not allowed to enter the Tuma. Or the Tvul Yom is not allowed to be there but in the Chatzer. Right? So what would this Tvul Yom do? What would this Tvul Yom do? If I'm not mistaken, he would stand right at the border of the Chatzer and lean his ear and his finger in, right? So he wouldn't be completely in there. He'd be standing outside, but just a little bit of him would extend, which is kind of interesting. Right, if you see Rashi, let's do that Rashi. It's the last Rashi in the thin lines. It's a lot longer Rashi, but it'll help explain what we're talking about here. V'yidcha say, Right, the Metzorah is to be sent out of the Machana, Shein bo karet, Shein onesh karet el al biat azara. Right, there's no karet on staying in the confines. The only of the Temple Mount, the only issue would be in being in the azara. Vizeli kanes lazara, the Metzorah who is to be purified, even as a Baal Keri, doesn't enter the azara. I think this is in general. El shari niknor, he'd only go to the niknor gate. Shlomit Kachu, the Nicknor gate itself was not sanctified, set sacred as the Azara. The Yachnis Yadav Lubahonot, right? He would stick out his thumbs. Vitar Mitzarato, Vishlach Pitzcho Lazara, Lishchot Ularev Yarav Shimsho Vitar Mikruya. Right? And then he would be able to send his Karban Pesach, and by the time night came, he would eat the Karban Pesach no longer as a Tvul Yom. Right? He would dip in the morning, he would lean his head and his thumbs in to get sprinkled with blood. He would send his Karban Pesach or be part of a Chabura that was offering a Karban Pesach. Nighttime would fall. And then by the Seder, he would be purified both from Tzarat and from Keri. We're going to stop here. But the assumption that we have from Ula is that just like the restriction on... Once the restriction on Mitzorah was waived for the Karban Pesach, the assay of Kares by Karban Pesach, so too the restriction on a Tvul Yom entering the Azara was waived. So too we should say, just as from Yibum, we know that Eshet Ach is permitted through Yibum, so too we should suggest that all Arayot, including Achot Isha, should be permitted as a result of Yibum, which would necessitate, again, going back to the point, the last three daf, which would necessitate, that is the Havamina that would make us think that Yibum overrides all Arayot, or all Arayot that are applicable. So comes the Pasuk of Aleha to tell us otherwise, right? So that's where we're leaving off, that Ula showed that once one restriction by the Metzorah Tzvul Yom was waived, the other restriction is also waived. And that seems to be legitimate, at least according to Ula. We're going to question that next week. So too, if Eshet Ach is waived through Yibum, then Achot Isha, it's legitimate to suggest that Achot Isha should also be waived. And we would need a Pasuk to tell us that logic is flawed. And that would necessitate the Pasuk of Alel. Of course, that only works if Ula holds firm and that we don't have any more questions. Spoiler alert. Ula is challenged in the very next line, but it goes into the next daf, so we will stop there. Having fun yet? Again, we're not really dealing with a lot of complicated relationships. We're it's really a lot of limudim, both from sukkim and both from hermeneutics, like we saw from Rabbi Shmuel. Now I know why they don't learn Yevamos in seventh grade. Okay. Have a great day. And
thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a wonderful day. See you soon.